Lives of Pitch, the podcast where we pitch the best films that'll never get made. I'm Matt Turner.
And I'm Tom McGrath. And the game goes like this. We ask you, our devoted listeners, to come up with titles that you'd like to hear us pitch.
We then collaborate, coming up with story points, casting, and even marketing strategies.
Without further ado, this week's title is... Didn't we used to be younger?
Didn't we used to be younger?
Yeah, there we go.
That's the one I picked.
That's the title. That's the one Jenny picked.
If you want to change it, Thomas, you can change it.
No, I'm fine. That one given to us by Jeff Beard. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
He got in touch with us on facebook.com/ Life's a Pitch podcast. You can also find us on Twitter as well, at Life's a Pitch Show, to give us titles for the genres we ask for, or just give us titles any time of the week, really. Give us a chat.
Some words out.
Get on our social media thing.
Throw a random series of words out and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We probably won't pick it, but we might.
Yeah, we have done in the past.
We definitely have. People have been like, what genre was that? I just gave you a random thing.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, big like.
Jenny Garner, not that one.
Hi.
Or I'm here.
Indeed, that one.
When I am that
to,
one
to
now.
The
I've evolved.
Of Lives of Pitch.
Yep, it's that Jenny Garner.
It's the Jenny Garner you'd most expect to be on Lives of Pitch podcast.
We're doing coming of age movies.
Oh yeah, we're doing them
this week.
Coming of age movies. Oh boy, what's one of them?
It's a film.
Yeah.
Where?
Come on, you know the answer to this.
Where? I feel like...
We've studied this, Tom. Come on, we practiced.
I didn't. I was just listing off coming-of-age movies.
We practiced this
a minute
ago.
I didn't even do that from memory. I just looked up at Google.
Read your lines.
Oh, right, okay. A coming-of-age movie is a film about a person that is coming of age... Coming of age means that they are finding their place in the world. That is all I have to say about coming of age movies.
Thank you for sharing. Very good. Very good.
I brought my laser pen as well.
But you've not brought a PowerPoint, Tom.
No. I can't afford a computer.
What is this character?
I like him. I hope he comes back.
Yorkshire school child. Poor Yorkshire school child.
Like, I don't know why you took poor. Like you were like, you know what this character needs more of? Economic status.
It's culturally relevant nowadays, Matthew.
Anyway, this character needs to explore. Anyway, should we do some honourable mentions?
Yes.
Yeah, what are them?
Yeah, let's do some
honourable mentions.
Honourable...
What one honourable mention?
Coming of honourable mentions.
Please don't just stop using coming of and then other things. Makes me feel uncomfortable.
So from Ross_originals, we've got Voice Breaking Point.
Voice?
Yes.
Oh, I get it. Breaking voice.
It.
Right, yeah.
Breaking... It sounds right. That sounds like an... extreme sports action movie.
I thought
it was just a spin-off of The Voice.
So, is Breaking Point a film, or is this a Point Break?
It's a Point Break prequel.
These are all prequels.
So, no, I've got a suggestion, guys. So, as a young boy, who's played by...
Tom Holland.
Yeah, not Tom. We're going to cast him a lot today. I think it's that great kid from Hunt for Wilder People.
Oh, Julian Dennison.
Him. Yeah, that's
Julian
him.
Dennison. So Julian Dennison is in a choir. And he's like, he sings all the high notes.
Shouldn't have laughed already at that.
You know, they're like, whoa! Like he gets all them high notes.
Yeah.
He's like that kid that takes in helium. He gets up there. But then his voice starts breaking.
Uh-oh.
And he's defined himself by this choir.
This is a good idea for a film.
Is it?
This choir is how he has defined himself for his childhood.
And I bet like he's got pushy parents.
Yeah, they're really into it. They want him to be the best of the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now he's either got to figure out a new way of... But his voice is... It's not settling at being deeper. It's still, you know, wibbly-wobbly. So he's got to find something else to put all of his efforts. And,
he's trying to hide it from his tutors and stuff.
Yeah.
And like, and then, but at night he's sneaking out and going to jazz clubs and going like, oh, hey, everybody, it's me, Julian Dennison.
He carries around a helium tank in his rucksack and just keeps like huffing it, trying to make his voice stay higher to try and maintain it.
Oh, yes. Okay, right. But then he like goes too hard on the helium. He spends all his pocket money on helium. And he starts being late to stuff because he's got to then pick up a job. And then he's like, yeah. Anyway. And then, it, like, outside the helium manufacturer, when they turn him away because he's late on the last payment for helium, outside they find there's another guy who was the last champion of, you know, high choir. Singing. Yeah.
Yeah.
The last champion of high singing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Salad Jones.
Salad Jones. It's all gone wrong for me. It literally has.
He's got songs of praise.
It's all gone wrong for me, Alan Jones. I used to be the best singer in all of Wales.
And then Kenneth Matthews comes along.
Here comes Kenneth Matthews. And Charlotte Church.
I can't get as deep as that Tom Jones.
It was just no place for me, so I started taking the helium.
I'm just another Welsh singer.
You know what? It only gets you so far, Julian Dennison's character. Only gets you so far.
This is actual Alan Jones.
Yeah.
He's just happy for the work.
Yeah. And I think that at that point... Like... Right.
And then so then they have like a training montage, but it's over, they're both singing Walking in the Air, but they can't hit the right notes, so it's just like real
I don't
bad.
Know about a training
I,
montage.
No, I really want it. I want it in there.
Alright, if you want.
I don't know what his training is, I don't know what the point is, but just I know that Walking in the Air is in there somewhere and it's over them like learning how to do shit.
Okay. There should be another character in here who's sort of alongside
like,
Julian Dennison.
I feel like coming of age characters very often have the romantic interests. Maybe this is a girl in this choir who Julian's always been trying to impress and has always been quite impressed with him, and then she's overheard him. They've like run into each other in the hallway in like school between classes.
Who played Shuri in Black Panther?
Queen of my heart. I can't remember what her name is. What is her name? Let's find out. But like they run into each other in the corridor, and like the helium tank falls out of his rucksack, and he's like, "No, you can't see it." And they have like a really awkward.
No, you can't see it.
But his voice keeps starting to just go deeper and deeper because he can't get it back.
No,
it's just rolling further away
Give
from
me
him.
Give me back my helium.
And I think his parents like it comes to a head when there's a competition, and
Letitia Wright.
Yes.
Absolute queen.
So, it comes to a head. There's a competition coming up. His dad is really, played by
Jermaine Clement.
Yes. Yeah.
Is really, really pushing him toward, like, he's like, this is the big one, kid. Once you get through this one, they'll never forget you.
Yeah.
And this is the one they've really been, and he's like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be...
I just
want to
sing jazz.
Yeah, he's just like, I guess. Oh, yeah, okay. So, Alan Jones, instead of doing the whole training montage thing, takes him into a jazz club.
Yeah.
And they see, like, just takes this little boy into a jazz club. No, it's going to be, instead of Alan Jones, can it be Charlotte Church?
Yes, it can.
Okay.
Takes him into a jazz club. Where J.K. Simmons is throwing things and berating someone for being too slow or something. Crossover with Whiplash.
Walk into this jazz club and this cymbal just cuts into a wall. Like, oh, it's just J.K. Simmons. He comes here every Monday.
For practice.
I wish he didn't.
Use jazz a bad name. So...
You give jazz
a bad name.
That's why I switched to ballads. So then
Jazz Bon Jovi.
He starts realizing that he can express himself through other means than just choir singing. And he's not just his initial talent, like he can do other things. But then doing that, like, he's going to be late for this competition because he's there. He's still there learning about jazz. He gets caught up in the jazz. Then he realizes that Letitia Wright has followed him to the jazz club.
Yeah.
To see what was going on because she's like, what is he doing? Why is he always sneaking off?
She's like his bitter rival.
Yeah, yeah.
She's like the sort of the Carmelita Spatz for a series of unfortunate events. Experiences. No,
I would say it's a will they won't they sort of.
But she's just better than him.
Yeah, she's just better than him at choir singing.
Yeah.
And she'll be better for longer as well.
Yeah.
And because her voice isn't going to break. And she finds him, and then he has to, like, he sees her coming to the jazz club. He has to, like, climb out the back window, avoid it, all the while getting later and later for this competition.
Yes.
And then he eventually, like, busts in late to the competition. The whole school turns around, and then I'm thinking he just does an impromptu jazz performance.
I think he does a, like, Barry White level.
Yeah, like a sister act style, like, gospel Barry White level stuff.
When you say impromptu jazz performance, my mind immediately goes to that scene in Spider-Man 3.
No, right. My mind goes to that scene in Sister Act. So it's sort of
a mixture of the two.
After this great sort of like chase from the jazz club, he sort of comes in, he starts doing a song, and no one's really getting into it.
Yeah.
And then some of the musicians from the jazz club burst through the door, and they're like, "Hey, it's that kid who was really good at that jazz. We followed you here, kid. This crazy girl brought us over here."
Yeah.
And then they start playing instruments along with him.
I want to say Benedict Cumberbatch, who is playing one of the jazz musicians, jazz pianist, picks up the old lady on the organ and throws her away. He goes, "Get out of the way, witch!" And he's like, "Hip hop, do bow, come on now!" And then so goes to some.
But it ends with a choir singing to jazz music.
Yeah,
Julius Edison's got his deep voice going, and everyone's clicking their fingers while also singing hymns.
Yeah, and it's Sister Act.
Yeah.
Whoopi Goldberg's she was the original organist.
Yeah,
like, yeah, this is great.
She's like, "I've been thrown away, but I like it." I've been thrown away, but I like it.
Traditional plus the experimental. It's nice.
That was coming of age for some reason.
Yeah, Damien Chazelle, if you're listening. Is it Damien Chazelle? David Chazelle? La La Land.
Oh, Damien, yeah.
Damien, yeah.
That dude.
Yeah, if you're listening. Voice breaking point. There you go. Get Julian Dennis on the phone. Okay, so from Uncle Sahab Mihir Ji, we've got "I Cry Silently Now."
Jesus Christ.
That's
a really nice light tone, that
That's
one.
A mood killer, if ever I saw it. So, "I Cry Silently Now."
So, do you remember Beast that came out a few years ago that had Vanessa Hudgens and some blonde prick in it? It was a modern retelling of Beauty and the Beast.
This
is a modern retelling of The Little Mermaid. It was a film.
"I Cry Silently."
This is a modern retelling of The Little Mermaid in modern days. So it's a really whiny teenager who's like, "My dad won't let me." She does a really rich, like, Beverly Hills girl, like, in Clueless. She's got everything she'd want. Like, look at all this stuff. Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think my collection's complete? No, it isn't. I need more. Right?
It begins with,
and she's always
a musical where she sings that exact same song, but it's in the style of an MTV's Cribs.
Hilary Duff.
Yeah. And it's sarcastic as well.
Yeah.
It's Hilary Duff.
Isn't it?
Isn't it me?
Wouldn't you think that my collection complete?
This is my pet lobster. whatever. She's got a pet lobster.
Yeah, her dad's got like a big fish tank. Got a big fish tank in her room. One more of her rooms a fish
and
tank.
He's got a big fish. She got a big fish tank because her dad is the CEO of an aquarium company.
Yeah. The CEO.
Yeah, the CEO
Trident.
Yeah. Trident, isn't it? What's
his name? Trident, King Trident.
Trident Industries.
And he's all right, actually. He's a bit overprotective, yeah. But he's, like, trying to kind of make her not a whiny little bitch.
He's trying a
ton. He certainly is. And her aunt from out of town comes to visit, and it is the woman from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Alison Brie. Visit as her aunt from who doesn't come to visit very often. Her dad's out of town on a business trip,
right.
And Alison Brie comes in and she's like, hey, how's it going? And they have like a little powwow and a catch up, and she's like, my dad won't let me go and see this guy I like from school. He's invited me to the prom in 3 days'
and
time.
She's like, I can do magic.
And she's just like, well, hey, I've been travelling in Europe, because that's how Americans think Europe works, isn't it? Or something like that. And she's like, I've got a bargain for you. She does the bargain thing. Mm. And so she takes a voice.
She takes her cell phone because it's modern.
Takes a cell phone and
now,
her voice.
Now she can't text.
She can't complain on Facebook. I cry silently now.
I like it. Okay.
And that's just me. It's just me whining to myself. And if I can only whine to myself, what's the point?
Yeah. So she's like, has all the sort of, she's trying to get a hold of people, but in person, no one really likes talking to her because she's so whiny.
I love the idea of Hilary Duff going into a payphone?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Genuinely forgot the name.
What do you call it?
You call one of those phones that's out on the street.
Walking into one of those, what do you call them? Payphones. Out where there's tones. Out where there's land. Out where you don't have a data plan.
Payphones.
I love it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to die. That's why I cry. Silently now.
Cut to wide shot of this payphone. Like, inside it's like musical, outside she's just dancing in this payphone.
And there's people from school videoing her doing it and putting it onto Instagram. So it's now like a viral video, but she can't see it. She doesn't have a phone or a computer or anything.
She's hit rock bottom.
Right, all right.
No.
Oh, no, actually, no, she hasn't. She's got to fall in mud first.
We've got a big hurdle to leap over here, guys.
Yeah.
So a big plot point in The Little Mermaid is that Ursula takes Ariel's voice and pretends to be another human woman to marry the prince. Mm.
You know what this is, right?
This is Alison Brie using her phone to text this guy she fancies. So he's not like in high, he's like
that's,
some hot.
That's disturbing.
I know what it is. So he's like a really hot barista at the Starbucks down the road, and she's told him that she's like 18, but really this girl's like 16. Alison Brie is like, you're too young for this shit.
I think it's a famous person.
Oh,
I think it's like an actor or someone off like The Bachelor or something.
It's Prince.
It's actually Zac Efron.
It's Prince.
I don't want to give it any. Okay, right. It's actually okay. It's Prince.
No, it's not Prince. He's too old.
Yeah,
he's
well, I was gonna say. It's I was Zac gonna say Efron's you're gonna regret that choice. I don't want to say no, but you're gonna regret it.
Zac Efron's a much better call.
It's young Matthew Perry from
oh my
Friends.
God. Why?
Or Zac Efron.
I think it's Zac Efron. They're interchangeable, aren't they?
Yeah.
We learned this in 17 again, so that's fine.
So, fucking hell. So, Zac Efron, yeah, he's like...
Young Matthew Perry.
He's a famous... He's like got
loads, switching in
loads and loads of Instagram followers. He's one of those guys who is like, whoa, totally Instagram
I just
zone.
Want them...
I've just taken it out.
And Matt Perry to switch in between scenes,
so
like
right.
From shot to shot, like an over shoulder.
No,
this is what they do,
it's a
right?
Plot point. Yeah.
So this is what it is. There's two. They're brothers. Matthew Perry is a bit older and nearer Alison Brie's age.
A bit older.
And Zac Efron. This is young Matthew Perry.
Oh, Zac Efron is a singer, right?
Okay.
And Matthew Perry is the guy who actually does all the singing.
So it's a Lizzie McGuire movie.
Alison Brie has fallen in love with the voice of Zac Efron.
Who is Matt Perry?
Matt Perry's the actual singer, because Zac Efron's just the face, right? Matt Perry is the singer that they couldn't quite, you know, he's the singer-songwriter that is...
Matt Perry is Isabel from the Lizzie McGuire movie, and Zac Efron is, I think he's called Pablo, who's the hot singer from the Lizzie McGuire movie who can't sing.
No one saw that movie, Jenny.
Get fucked, Thomas. It's the best film ever made.
But... Right. So, what you've got here is this Little Mermaid coming-of-age movie, which is crossing over somehow with another coming-of-age movie over here.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Yeah. I think that makes sense for a modern thing of the Little Mermaid, because the prince should be having his own journey of discovery.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be go out and get that guy. It should be like they're both coming together.
Yeah.
go out and get that guy. So that guy also has problems.
What happens is, like, this viral video of her dancing in this payphone booth has gone around. and so she's really upset, and someone's pushed her in the mud, and she's like on the side of a road being
really
upset.
How is she upset? She can't go on social media.
But no, because she's been confronted by the popular girls in school, who is like her rival.
Okay.
People who she's usually like in charge of, and now she's not got a phone, she can't defend herself.
Mm.
So they like push her in the mud and do mean girl things to her.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like sort of trying to walk home, and she's really sad. Like that bit in Clueless where Cher's walking away and she's really sad. And then Zac Efron pulls up in a car and is like, hey, do you need a lift? Are you okay? You look like you're in trouble. Because he sees this girl and she's just like, it's Zac Efron, I've been talking. Oh, it's Zac Efron. And she like hops into his car and he gives her a lift and sort of he decides that he actually quite likes. But he can't contact her again. She doesn't have a phone.
I phased out briefly. Have I missed the bit where she falls in mud?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay, thank you. Just making sure that happens.
She got pushed in mud.
Okay,
fine.
Good. You've got to be pushed in mud if
he,
you
like, puts a towel down on the chair so she can sit on it.
That's rock bottom.
Yeah, that's the meeting with the goddess.
And so that's it.
Goddess of mud, get down!
Oh. So, like, she, while she's covered in mud, I think someone helps her.
Mm-hmm.
And
Zac Efron helps her.
Well, yeah. Okay.
It's Matt Perry.
Because that's it. Because the prince helps Ariel in The Little Mermaid, so he has to help her.
All right. I guess so.
And then when he drops her off at her home, he's like, "Hey, can I give you my number and you can call me?" She's like, "I don't have a phone. I don't have any way of getting a hold of you."
Hmm.
And he's just like, "Oh God." But she's so embarrassed by it, she just runs off.
My family.
She's like,
are hippies.
"I'm sorry, I don't have a phone." And runs off and he's like, but I don't either. But as she's gone away, because his agent doesn't let him have one because all those too many teenage girls get his number and call him and it's creepy.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
yeah so Alison Brie's got a hold of,
he might find out what that someone else isn't only getting a 10% cut of their revenue.
But who is Alison Brie texting?
Who's texting Matthew Perry?
Fair enough. Who is
pretending to be Zac Efron?
Yeah. there's a huge sort of thing where they are so much more than their phones made them. They don't need this.
Like,
they don't need
Matthew
to have a fake
Perry,
profile online.
Matthew Perry's like male Ursula. He is the agent.
He's Zac Efron's uncle.
He's the singer songwriter that didn't make it.
Yeah.
He had a one hit wonder and then didn't. And he's got all it, like, it's, we've got the whole character building moment of like in his office at home. He's got all pictures of himself on posters and stuff as the newest young teen singer and songwriter, and then he had a one hit wonder and then, you know, like faded, and now he's trying to regain his past by using Zac Efron.
But Zac Efron's kind of, he's become bored of stardom. He just wants to live a basic Beverly Hills lifestyle out of the limelight.
Just sort of like,
just want to go back to his Beverly Hills.
He wants to go back to his roots.
Yeah, run of the mill, like everyone else. He wants to just have the one pool. And, like, you know, just sort of...
It's the one convertible.
Yeah, just a car and a big house in Orange County.
Yeah.
No, what he really wants, right? So he decides he doesn't. He wants to live a cut-off lifestyle, like in a cabin in the woods. Like he doesn't want to have all this like pressure of technology because stardom's getting to him.
Mm.
And here's this girl who doesn't have a phone. So he's like, maybe she like we. She doesn't want it either.
Yeah.
So
he's got to know who I am.
Yeah, yeah, because she's been so upset, she hasn't even realised who it is.
So I think they end up getting married on a pier, and Alison Brie also. This is very Shakespearean. Also ends up sort of texting. Like, she's texting Zac Efron at the wedding.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh yeah, want to meet up with me later? And then she's noticed Zac Efron's not texting, but she's noticing Matthew Perry texting. And they end up getting a joint ceremony. And then Alison Brie's
like, I feel
like
they should get a comeuppance of some kind. No,
they don't. Not in this one, Matt. They don't get stabbed by a ship.
No, they do. They both get stabbed by a ship.
What, it's like everyone runs them over as they drive away from the wedding.
No, it's a crossover with Speed 3.
Oh my god! Because when I first heard this, like when I first heard this title, my mind immediately went to just a film of Willem Dafoe standing in front of a camera going, "I cry silent."
So Willem Dafoe, and a reference to Speed 2 or 3, who's got the boat.
Speed 2.
Speed 2, sorry.
Because Willem Dafoe's in that movie.
Yeah, yeah. So Willem Dafoe, like, as a reference to Speed 2, is in, like, a motorboat, and he's just like, I'm the Danumar! And then, like, just smashes into, like, or just shouting, Deus Ex Machina! And then, like, just smashes
off a ramp onto the pier.
Knocks him into the water.
Knocks him into the water. He goes flying off, and then, like, you know, like the end of Some Like It Hot, where
he picks up both their phones and goes, oh, saucy. They've got a this is a saucy conversation.
So,
so they get into a boat and they're rowing away, and Matthew Perry's like, you know, I'm not really Zac Efron. She just goes, nobody's perfect.
No, that's a way too happier ending.
Okay,
I'm nobody's perfect.
Again, he runs them over, blood all over the place. They, Willem Dafoe then just jets off the other side of the pier.
Okay.
Like, we cut
through
back
the wedding ceremony.
We cut back to the wedding ceremony briefly just to go, what the fuck was that? Willem Dafoe then jetting off into the sunset.
Uh-huh.
Camera like on Greece. His face going, that was, I cry silently now. What did you think of the picture? And then keeps asking him questions like it's
discussion
a survey.
Discussion topics for your class later.
While he's on a jet ski and the credits are going up. That's how it ends.
Yeah, there we go.
I cry silently now.
What did you think of the picture? I was a fan, but I was in it. So, yeah, you really can't trust your own judgment. On
he's been this Sebastian all the way through. He's been her bodyguard trying to find her.
He's in a lobster costume.
Yes.
And I think it wasn't a jet ski. It was a motorboat. And I think he's like... Your wedding carriage awaits, young couple. And then they get in the back, and he goes, "By the way, I'm a magic transformation of your lobster pet."
Let's go under the sea. It's not a jet ski or a motorboat. It's a mini submarine.
No, it is
jets off onto the pier.
It is a motorboat, but like the end of Grease, it just goes underwater.
No, it's that boat from
Knight Rider. What was that one?
From that James Bond movie.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And it's da 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 da. Yeah, that's how it ends. Willem Dafoe.
I think
so that was I cry silently now.
Yeah.
What the fuck was that?
What it was, Matthew, was a real bringer up of the tone.
Yeah. So thank you everyone who's given us titles this week. Remember to find us on social media, facebook.com/Life's a Pitch Podcast, Twitter @Life's a Pitch Show, Instagram as well @Life's a Pitch Show if you want to find us on there.
In addition, if you have listened this long, then you've probably been enjoying the podcast, or at least I hope you have, and if you do want it to keep going, if you want to keep getting better, then you have a vested interest in going over to patreon.com/Life's a Pitch Podcast to help us out in a monetary fashion, and you can give us a little bit of change each and every month to help us get better, and also get a little bit of reward yourself. You get an extra pitch every single week, and you also get to help vote for the genre you could have avoided the coming of age genre, if you hate it that much. Every single week you can vote on the genre that's coming up and get an extra pitch and all sorts of movie commentaries. We've literally just recorded a movie commentary for Aardman's fantastic
masterpiece.
Pièce de Résistance.
Best film ever made.
Pièce de Résistance, that which is Chicken Run. Chicken, comma, run, exclamation mark. If you want to listen to that, it's an hour and a half of basically an excuse to watch Chicken Run.
Yeah. It's a basically an hour and a half laughter track.
Yeah.
We just
enjoy it.
This film is really great.
We just look up who's in it and talk to you about the IMDb. It's fun. So anyway, if you want to do that, then you can hop on over to Patreon and help us out there. That's patreon.com/ Life's a Pitch Podcast.
People who have done that already are Joe Hegarty, Brent Black, Spicy Boy, Alex Keane, Mahir Trivedi, Stephen Douglas Thomas, Ross_Originals, My Waste of Talent, and Brandon Spanky Mills.
Thank you all. You're amazing.
Thank you so much.
Absolute bloody legends.
So, before we get on to the main pitch, do you want to hear an award?
Oh, I'd love to.
I would love to hear an award. I Which kind of award is it?
It's the Yes Very Clever Award.
Oh, yeah, one of
the best
week.
Awards.
Yeah. We have one every week, hopefully. Should we play the sting?
Yeah, go on then. Yes, very clever. There we are.
There's the sting. This Yes Very Clever Award we give to people who have given us titles every week that are based around an existing title and just a pun, basically.
Yeah, usually it's a bit of a play on words that we couldn't work with if we were trying to pitch it, but everyone just sort of gets it.
Yeah. So this week we've got one from James Cannon, and that is Watership Down 2, Hairs in Strange Places.
Very, very clever.
Very, very clever.
Very clever. I see what you did there.
Yes, yes. Very clever. Very clever.
Very clever.
What was the name of the person?
James Cannon.
Thank you, James. Very clever, James. Very, very, very clever.
Let's move on, shall we, to our final pitch. And that is, again, from Jeff Beard. Didn't we used to be younger?
Didn't we? Did we? Didn't Jenny's got her hand up.
I've got one word for you guys.
Yeah.
Sure. Cocoon.
It's a coming of age film. Yeah, that is true. This is the film version of The Very Hungry Caterpillar.
I mean, I was thinking of saying the film version of Rugrats.
No, well, here's my thing, right? This is a youth eating contest star, right? Played by Julian Dennison from
Hunt for the Wilder People.
Second casting.
Yeah. Oh. Julian Dennison is a star of eating competitions, and he's doing really well.
Mm.
And then he's like his parents are putting more and more pressure on him to win more and more, because they are the only he's the only breadwinner, ironically, for the family.
Every competition, he just wins loaves and loaves of bread.
Yeah, he's winning bread. So, because they're mainly made by bakeries, and then at one point, he just eats so much bread. He's beating his records, and the competition is pretty stiff from the Russians. Mm. And eventually, he just passes out. And then wakes up covered in cocoon.
What?
He just cocoons over.
How? Why?
It's like following his family trying to figure out why Julian Dennison's just cocooned.
So this film is a coming of age for him in more ways than one.
Yeah.
But it's really about his family trying to figure out why he's good. It's a hard science film.
Well, I think in the end they're going to figure out that they pushed him too hard, and that it's a metaphor for him shrinking into a shell and not becoming a real person.
I think that some of the films we've pitched over the course of this episode haven't had enough of the romantic component in the coming of age films often do.
Oh, okay.
Normally, the main drive of the character, certainly at the start of the film, is that they want to get the guy or girl they're interested in to pay attention to them, to have a kiss. They want to go to prom with them.
Right.
So I think we need to bring that element into here somewhere. Okay. I don't think we've had enough of that so far. This is our main pitch. We've got to make sure that we get this one tight.
Mm. Okay.
So I think...
I agree.
Now see, when I said cocoon, what I meant is, isn't this just the film Cocoon in which lots of old people become young again?
I disagree. I think it should be Julian Dennison in a cocoon bouncing around with his head poking out. That's the image I have for this film.
Didn't we used to be younger?
So he's starting off at this this sort of new, I guess like a high school.
Mm.
Maybe they've moved to America from New Zealand because they've got more publishing deals over there.
And there's more eating.
So they lived in America. So I think he has to be like, he's always kind of people like throw punnets of strawberries at him, and they count everything that he eats.
Yeah.
Like, because in the Hungry Caterpillar, it was always like, so hungry he ate one whole apple. So hungry he ate two whole pears. Bloody and they like throw the fruit at him and chant.
This is all in the pre-title montage as well.
Yeah, this is all in the first 10 minutes of this film. They have set up that this kid is bullied.
Cold open of didn't we used to be younger?
Yeah, no, they wait for it.
Okay, yeah, I'm
so I've got. So should I say where the film is? Where my end goal for the film is?
Mm.
The end goal of the film is that he's going to point out to all of these kids that every single one of them had something weird or embarrassing when they were younger. He's like, didn't we all used to be younger and not cool and have something? That's what I mean, if you don't like that, we can change that. Did you have a better idea for the title?
I thought that, like, they were somehow going to all start cocooning.
Yeah, no.
And then they'd wake up as adults.
And... Like 13 going on 30?
No. They'd wake up
as old people.
As caterpillars.
No.
They'd wake up with butterfly wings.
Giant
butterfly people.
Okay.
What about if, instead of that, instead of this
Jenny,
monstrosity...
You started this madness.
Yeah.
You came out and just said, cocoon.
I meant the film Cocoon. Not he needs to grow into a cocoon and become a butterfly man.
Well, that's where we are, because of your ambiguity.
Okay, so listen. I've got two things to say here.
I'm not saying just him. The whole school becomes butterflies.
Okay, so I've got two things to say here. First of all, what if we said it starts off with him going to his high school reunion and the rest of the film is a flashback and then he's doing a speech saying, didn't we all used to be young and then they're not bullies anymore?
Didn't we all used to be butterfly people?
That was
weird, wasn't it?
This is a Mothman origin story and he learns to predict tragedies around the world.
What?
I love it!
Do you know about Mothman?
How does that tie into anything?
Because
he's
a butterfly.
You wanted the cocoon!
Yeah, but was the Mothman an actual moth?
So have you heard about Mothman? The Mothman is a cryptid who lives in America?
Yeah.
Somewhere in America.
He always turns up.
He predicts disasters. He predicted a bridge collapse in... He predicted a bridge collapse in a rural place. He predicted a car accident. He apparently, supposedly, predicted the attack on the Twin Towers because he was like seen flying around them like 2 weeks before it happened. So apparently, he turns up like two or so weeks before a disaster happens, and that's like a warning sign to say bad things are going to happen here soon. Yeah. Or maybe he causes it by the flap of his wing.
I had more of a sort of Cloverfield vibe going on here, where there would be some chemicals in the local area.
Yeah, that's how it happens. There's loads of
Mothmen.
There's
a whole school full of Mothmen.
Whole town full of Mothmen.
Okay, well, at least we're on the same page now.
Yeah.
So there's we're a whole all town full
as long as the Mothmen mythos comes into it. So he's got to be. Well, let me see when Mothman first appeared.
Here's the thing, right? He gets to school. People are bullying him. It's not going so amazing. But then, like, he seizes his chance one day, right? This school happens to be, because we're doing this in a sort of Matilda-esque style.
Yeah.
Thunderpants vibe, that sort of, like, a bit wacky.
Yeah, a bit weird.
This school is so stingy with food. right?
Yeah.
They give you 3 peas and half a chip each.
Because they know that if the kids eat too much, they will cocoon and they will turn into moth.
Yeah.
It's next to a chemical plant.
Well, we don't know that yet in the film.
We don't know that yet,
They're just stingy with all the food, right? And then
Julian Dennison is like,
locks the he like says, I think there's a guy out there in the front. I think he's stealing all the gym equipment. And then all the dinner ladies run out with like ladles to attack the guy who's stealing all the gym equipment.
So the Mothman was first sighted on November 12th, 1966. So I think this has to happen at the beginning of 1966.
Well,
so
I think we've
got a great soundtrack.
Yeah, well, yeah, with the sighting though, it doesn't have to be until later.
This is true. Older, I think this is definitely a 60s based film.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is a 60s sort of like that. You've still got that 50s like space race. You got this. Yeah. Well, not this, but you know, the 50s sort. Yeah. Like retrofuturism thing.
Kids get exploited all over the shop. They're in West Virginia.
People are obsessed with radiation.
Pleasant. Yeah,
like all that stuff's going on. And then it's suddenly got to be a good film. then basically Julian Dennison says there's something out the front, like whatever. Locks the front door to the school hall.
Yeah.
And then the whole school just jump behind the counters. Or he can behind the counter and he starts dishing up food to everyone. Yeah.
And they have like a big Peter Pan like hook style.
Rufio! They start calling him
suddenly.
No, they start calling. He's got a big moth on his t-shirt. They start calling him
Mothman. Mothman. Suddenly, air raid siren goes off.
And he's like, oh shit!
And they're the only ones in this sort of nuclear safe school hall.
And they're like hiding under all the lunch tables. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They know they're training, it's the 60s. Prepare yourself for nuclear attack. All those. I learned the other day that a fedora was made to protect from nuclear flash bomb radiation.
There we go.
Yeah.
So the more close enough to see that, it'd definitely help.
I'm seeing Julian Dennison like hiding under a counter in the school kitchen and seeing a vat of something that just says like special test sauce. Keep out, right?
He's like, oh, the special test sauce.
Yeah, he turns around a vat he's been dishing things out of, and then he goes, oh shit.
I think he keeps eating it. Like they get trapped in the thing, and he's like, he's eating the stuff, because he's gonna be the first Mothman, right? But then as he's eating it, like, there's a flash, and then suddenly. Things start going off in his head. Like he start like you he you get like a vision trip, like any kind of seeing the future and all the tragedies we know and love, JFK and all
we
that.
We know and love.
Yeah. Okay.
All the tragedies we know and love.
This is a point at which speaking only pieces of words that fit together that sound right to my ears. Comes back to bite me in the arse, isn't it?
Yeah.
All the tragedies we know and love.
I think at this point his love interest,
yeah,
who is going to be, Mara Wilson.
Okay.
Mara Wilson is like, she's sort of been on his side a little bit. She thinks, meanwhile, that she's sort of helped him get the idea to instigate this food fight. And she's like standing, she's not under a desk, she stood up.
But they're all chanting like Mothman, Mothman. Yeah. Because for some reason, you said earlier, I didn't pick up on this, but he's got a moth on his t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's
why?
Like, she's like sensible. She's like, oh man, the sirens, we should get under the tables, guys.
When you're an ex-eating champion, it is. We're gonna have to bulk Julian Dennison up for this.
Yeah.
It's hard to get clothes that fit, so he's gonna have like a really weird fit, which means that you gotta wear something
enough.
With a fucking moth on it. That's a whole thing. Like he's like, oh mum, all the other kids have got Nikes and they're all wearing their Adidas track
Nikes?
Suits and things.
Yeah.
And
in like, the '60s.
And I can't.
There is now.
There's like, just do it, and I'm
not
like,
in the
and
60s.
I'm like, just wear a moth.
What weird version of the 60s is this?
I don't know. I've got no answer for that.
Fair enough.
Mum, all the other kids, they're wearing
greaser outfits with their leather jackets.
They're wearing their leather jackets and they're firing up the hot rods. So, and I'm just here with my moth t-shirt and I hate it.
So we're beating around the bush here, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got a nuclear bomb going off.
Yeah.
We're all under the assumption that nuclear bomb is far enough away not to destroy a school, but close enough to make them all cocoon over.
Yeah.
And turn into mothmen.
Mm-hmm.
I think this special source, sort of like in the presence of radiation, goes and then the whole school is cocooned.
Oh, and inside they're growing into mothmen.
Yeah.
They are trapped. Because this is a timeline when nuclear war breaks out.
Yeah.
Okay? They're trapped in this cocoon until, like, this is like the time machine levels of time.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
They come out and they for some reason he's like, he's seeing all the things that are going through.
Hmm.
He, like, when they get to the future, he learns everything, and then when he goes back to the past, he will prevent the nuclear war, and then also know all the things that are going to happen.
Yes,
and he's going to do it to try and save Mara Wilson's character.
Okay,
because
that's good.
Something he's clinging on to because he doesn't really like his parents.
Yeah,
so he sort of she was the only person who was really his friend at school.
Yeah. Okay. And at home. Yeah.
All right. I think so. We need to have this scene when they emerge from the cocoon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's this whole school of kids, and I think they all are aged up. I think they, because they've got to be. Didn't we used to be younger?
Yeah.
Oh no! Actually, no.
The then is important.
No, I think the time he spends in they all spend in the future.
Mm.
They all forget. He's the only one that remembers.
Yes.
And everyone's like, I've got a little bit of still, my voice is broken. Didn't we used to be younger when they get back? When they all get back to the past.
Is it did we used to be younger or did we used to be younger then? Didn't we used to be younger?
Yeah, didn't we used to be younger?
So like when that's what they say, that's what Mara Wilson says when they get back to the past.
Some confident script writing there.
Yeah, you've got to say it in the film, otherwise it didn't work. So that's the final scene, right?
Yeah.
They get back to the past. We now know through context from the film that Julian Dennison knows everything, every tragedy that's about to befall the world, but has to leave society.
I mean, it's specifically Northern America, to be honest.
Okay. Is it?
Oh.
But yeah, he's not recently across. I don't think he's seen across the world. Let me have a look at his.
I understand Mothman's allegiances are only to the United States.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. So,
do you want a quick description of what he now looks like as a Mothman?
Yeah, go please.
So, he's a sort of large grey colour. He's got glowing red eyes. The car headlights would like shine red.
Just like Julian Dennison.
Great casting. Like one of the things from Justice League.
He's a large flying man with 10-foot wings.
Parademon from Justice League.
Yeah,
that's the impression I'm getting.
Film.
So
far,
could be large, but his eyes go like bicycle reflectors.
Julian Dennison. Yep.
I Julian Dennison has glowing red eyes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Greyish color. Wings.
So they've gone back to the past, and now he knows.
That's the last scene of the film.
Yeah.
The last scene of the film is them being back in the past, and now he knows how to prevent what he's already prevented.
World War III.
And like the Cold War basically exploding early,
okay.
And he's already prevented that, and we know that he's going to try and prevent. Although he's going to be predicting bad things to happen in the future.
But I thought this transformation nuclear tech was happening about 20 minutes into the film. What's the other hour?
Yes. Well, the other hour of the film is this pod, this cocoon, is there in this timeline where everything gets destroyed.
Yeah.
For the next 400, 500 years.
Yeah.
And they come out of it in 500 years later.
Yeah.
And they're all like, oh my God, what happened to the world? They find out what happened to the world.
Okay.
And then the adventure is there.
Yeah.
And then the coming of age happens there. And then
Matt, you've really skipped over 90%.
We're just not pitching.
This is where we are now. I'm trying to describe why to Jenny why we're not back to the past when we haven't gone to the future.
But so I would much rather have them do like a little, like a sort of 10 to 15, 20, maybe 20 minute bit in the future. So that way you're about 45 minutes into the film at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And then you come back and you have another, you have the other half of the film is him
trying to save
trying to look after and trying to grow up.
Doing a Terminator.
Mm-hmm. Trying to forgive his parents.
Yeah, no,
and trying to win over Mara Wilson despite his terrifying glowing red eyes.
I think he gets his glowing red eyes later.
I just love Julian Dennison going back to the past.
Yeah.
Like going and solving all these things that led up to World War III.
Yeah.
And by the end, he meets up with Mara Wilson back at the 60s.
Yeah.
And just go, and like this proper grizzled, hard Julian Henderson that's like grey, red glowing eyes, 10-foot wingspan, and just goes, I love you, Mara Wilson.
I think that, okay.
We used to be younger.
All the other kids are also in this pod, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to be aging the same amount.
Yeah.
So, like, I think
what we're not explaining right, I don't think we ever should, is how he goes back in time.
I know what it is. So basically, they go back into the cocoon, and it sort of shrinks around them, and I don't know, something happens. It catapults them back. It's never explained in the film, Tom. We don't know. The audience doesn't need to know.
Okay, so he gets out of the cocoon. He's the only one awake. He looks back.
Yeah.
All his friends are kind of still in cocoon, in stationary, kind of, what do they call it? Wait, like, not cryogenically frozen, but frozen in time.
Mm-hmm.
Stasis.
Yeah, they're in stasis.
Mm.
He gets out, and something is, from beyond the clouds, something is descending. Something huge, unthinkably huge. It's Mothra. Mothra speaks to Julian Dennison in his mind.
And goes, does like a little like ching on his forehead and his chest and gives him moth bending powers.
And says, this world has suffered too much.
You, Julian Dennison, must save us all from ourselves
you,
with the power of moths.
You, who they call Mothman.
No, I have come to you, a fellow moth.
It's not even that. It's like, it's very much like, I scanned the remaining life forces on this Earth and saved, and they, you know, like, there's a whole thing about a meteor.
Yeah.
The chemicals were, like, a Mothra egg or whatever, I don't care. But, like, he's like, I scanned this planet for life forms, and you seemed to be the one strongest. You had the most sustenance in the... so that he has, like, it's complete chance that he's just eaten the most.
Yeah.
And he just gets given these moth powers.
Yeah.
And shown psychically what happened to the Earth.
Yeah.
And then he says, climb back into the cocoon.
Yeah, and he, like, bats his wings and sends them back in time. So all the other... Has everyone else aged, or are they...
Everyone else is like...
Yeah, that's the point of the film.
Yeah, they've aged, like, maybe, I want to say, like, 3 years. No, nothing, like, insane, but they all... I don't know.
Have you seen Richard Dreyfuss in American Beauty? and Richard Dreyfuss in Jaws?
Yeah, it's
3 years is a lot
makes
to Richard Dreyfuss.
Makes a hell of a difference. If you're Richard Dreyfuss. Julian Dennison is now played by, what's his name? Aquaman. And...
Jason Momoa.
And
painted grey.
Grey and has like cuts on his eyes and like
red glowing red eyes,
scars all over his face.
Mara Wilson, the child Mara Wilson from Matilda, is now played by Mara Wilson.
But I think it's very important to note that Jason Momoa is still voiced
by
Julian Dennison.
Like, oh man, I can't believe I've aged.
Oh look, I've got the crazy abs.
Look at my crazy abs, Mara
Wilson. And he's like working out. He's like, God, look at this. Look, I could literally like, it's a whole. Look at this. I can lift
looks
so
like
much.
Looks like I've got some kind of moth powers.
Okay, so that ends on that line.
No, he's got to solve
this is like halfway through the film. Yeah. So what is his Spider-Man sort of thing. He has to. He's sort of showing off. He's buff. He's getting all the ladies, and he's distracted from his saving the world. He's like, oh, everyone likes me now. I've got crazy abs. Mara Wilson's a little bit like, I don't know, but he like flies her up into like a forest or something cool, and she's like, oh, you're a pretty cool guy.
I can show you tragedies.
I think he's probably ignoring Mara Wilson. Mara Wilson's really political as a character.
I can show you the world. I can show you it ending. I am here to save you and the rest of the states.
So
just the states.
Forget the other places now.
Mothman is here to stay
for the USA.
So
let's go and turn up at all the tragedies in the world.
He has like a couple of years of he has to, basically I, this is the it's building up to 1966 when this bridge crash happens.
Okay, but can I just say Mara Wilson really key on this whole bridge thing.
Yeah.
She's like, she's a political activist. She's like,
that's where she lives.
Yeah, she lives on top of this bridge. She's like, this bridge is like awful. Like, by the way, also, there's, what were the other tragedies that he predicted?
I think like a car crash. Something. There's sort of rumors of flying around the Twin Towers.
She's like, by the way, that car crash is going to happen. She kind of has figured this out herself. She's like a journalist or political activist, whatever. Then, right, he is ignoring her now.
Yeah.
And ignoring his duty to save the things of the world.
Yeah.
By getting distracted because everyone's chanting Mothman and all the girls want him.
He's the cool guy.
Yeah. It's like, can't you hear them? Everyone's chanting Mothman. Mothman is brilliant. Yeah.
So Mara Wilson's trying to sort out this whole bridge problem, and it's sort of until too late that he gets like a Mothman sense going off.
Yeah.
In like 66 just before it happens, and he's like, oh shit, Mara's there, and he has to like fly to try and to sort of try and get her out of the way, and realizes that because this is the thing, is they don't know if Mothman causes the bridge crashes, or if he's trying to warn people. So do you think he's trying to warn people, or do you think he's trying to create the bridge crashes to like kill off Trump's dad or something?
I think maybe I think he trashes the bridge.
Yeah.
He realizes he gets his moth power. He realizes that if he trashes the bridge, then someone who's going to be delivering information that's going to start World War III is going to be on it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So he has to do it.
So good.
But Mara Wilson won't leave the bridge, so he has to make this choice.
Oh my god!
He has to choose this is his coming of age moment. So he has to choose between his moment of saving the world.
This is his coming of age moment, even though it's completely not.
I think this is him having to choose
between saving the world or saving someone that
I don't
he
think
fancies.
He has to save Mara Wilson. I think that's a little cliche.
Yeah.
I think she's there watching, right? And
she takes the photo.
Here's the thing. He's driven by ego right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. She takes the photo. Exactly.
Yeah.
He has to decide whether he wants to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And be seen as a pariah. Or
keep being cool guy.
Keep being the cool guy that everyone loves.
Yeah.
And he decides until the world ends.
Yeah.
And he decides to do the right thing at this time, and then then Mara Wilson's like does the rest of the voiceover. She's like, for the rest of the century, I watched as he was there before every tragedy.
All the tragedies we know and love.
Every tragedy you know and love, Mara Wilson says. The Mothman was there. He probably caused it, but I bet it was for a good reason.
Meanwhile, here I am trying to
making
positive world change on my. So basically, the reason
I am on my YouTube channel.
She is actually
talking about conspiracy theories.
I think she's actually the one that saved the world. So she is actually doing loads of political work.
Yeah,
and like working as like a peacekeeper and everything, and actually working to make positive change regardless of Mothman's abilities.
I love my idea that she's a YouTube conspiracy theorist.
Why not both?
Yeah,
She is both. She started off with you.
Imagine if one of those got taken seriously.
Yep.
She's that. Yeah, that was, I guess.
That was like, yeah, I can't remember the
name.
Didn't
we used to be younger?
What a mess. I should never have said cocoon.
You live and learn.
It's like a moth flaps its wings.
So, yeah, thank you for that, Jeff, for giving us a title. Thank you, everyone who's contributed a title this week.
If you want to listen to more of the show, you can find us on iTunes, you can find us on Acast, all the places that you can find a good podcast. You can also find our RSS feed out on the Facebook and also on soundcloud.com/Last Pitch Podcast. Remember to tweet at us, big like, and all the other things if you enjoyed the show. If you didn't enjoy the show, maybe keep it to yourself. And make sure you go over to, if you enjoy it and you want to help us out, go over to Patreon, patreon.com/Last Pitch Podcast. Jenny. Thank you for coming on to the show again.
Oh, thanks, guys. Sorry about what I did there.
No, it was better than probably what we had.
I'm not sure about that, but I appreciate the confidence.
No. Honestly.
It was better than what we had.
As long as I got the Mothman in there, that's all I care about.
If there's one thing you guys can rely on, it's that Jenny will get a cryptid or a serial killer into the podcast.
And this week, I think I did both.
The thing is, right, that film was going nowhere until you mentioned Mothman.
Yeah.
Mothman saved our podcast this week.
That's what he does.
Yeah, he turns up at the site of disasters.
Sometimes just turns up at Lover's Lane to scare some teenagers also.
Yeah, yes he does.
It's a weird bit of very specific West Virginia lore.
So, anyway, thank you for coming on. Thank you again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And until you find yourself chosen by Mothra
in the future,
the Mothra of the future, to avert the doom of our world by causing smaller catastrophes. I've been Matt Turner.
I've been Tom McMoth.
I've been Jenny Garn. I don't have a moth pun.
Kakuna? No.
Pokemon.
Jenny Kakuna.
I didn't have anything for you. Sorry.
Neither did I. Sorry, Lesters.
Remember who pitched it.
Bye. Later.
Moth. Fuck Moth.